Hello, everybody. It's Thursday. That means it's Lakers Collective time. Happy to have everybody in on the YouTube channel. I'm Trevor Lane, joined by Jason Timpf and Jovan Buha. Guys, I'm fortuitous that we're live this morning coming in after a big Austin Reaves game winner from last night.
Dude, I jumped in the fourth quarter for this one, and then I watched the rest of the game in the morning, but I came in right as everything was falling apart. But here's the one thing I'm going to say. After Julius Randle gets the lead-changing layup, I was weirdly confident that Austin had a good chance to pull that out. That's the level he's been at, not just even in this season. Like, if you were to tell me 2 years ago, Austin needs to get a bucket on a final possession, he's just come through so many times. Remember Christmas Day last year when he toasted Andrew Wiggins off the dribble for a layup? Like, Austin's, like, sneaky, one of the dudes in the league you fear most in a spot like that. And man, what an incredible game. If you would have told me after Luka went down that we'd be sitting at 3-2 today, I would not have believed you. And yet here we are.
Austin Reaves averages over the past three games, 40 points, 5 rebounds, 10 assists on 50-40-90 shooting. It's just absurd. Like, there are number one options on lottery level teams that do not put up those types of numbers as the primary option. And obviously, you know, this is a small sample size, but a growing sample size of Austin putting this team on his back when Luka's been out, when LeBron's been out. Even going back to a couple of years ago, we've seen some big performances from him. So I've been joking on my show that with each passing game, he's earning an extra $1 to $2 million. And I think, like, whatever number you thought Austin was at before, I think you got to probably put a 4 in front of it.
Yeah, dude, one of the other things too is he specifically struggled against athletic teams in the past and teams that would pressure the ball. And, like, you can, one of my favorite things about the apex competitors in the league is that when they suffer some sort of defeat or loss or humiliation of any kind, they tend to take it personally. And it's very clear that Austin spent a lot of time in the gym this summer, adding some physicality and adding the ability to dribble through physicality. And, like, that's three really athletic defenses, obviously Minnesota from earlier. And then obviously you got that Portland team. That's one of the best ball pressure teams in the league. And he's just been phenomenal against those athletes.
He's been absolutely incredible the way that he's stepped up. I mean, this was a kind of a bet on yourself type of year, like 87, 88, 89, depending on where the numbers would come in over 4 years, $1 million. That's what Austin Reaves turned down in an extension from the Lakers over the summer. That's a lot of money. I know it's not his real value, but still, somebody's offering that much money to say, no, I'm going to wait until next summer. That is a big bet on yourself moment. And so far, it is definitely playing out in Austin's favor. Now, we're only 5 games in, but still, Austin has been absolutely phenomenal. And now that begs the question, of course, what is that going to look like once LeBron comes back, once Luka comes back? Can Austin continue playing at this level? But before we get to that, let's talk about that play itself. Jason, you said you were very confident that Austin could get that shot off, could hit it. What did you see on the read that Austin made, especially splitting the defense the way he did, attacking Gobert? And as a side note, is Rudy Gobert cooked? Is that because I'm getting a little worried about him.
So, you know, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the end of the Sacramento game where you could tell Austin was getting gassed for obvious reasons. I mean, especially when you take Gabe Vincent, Marcus Smart out of the equation, like, the team is utterly devoid of ball handling. You could see even just at the end of that game, like, they were dying for someone like Ayton or Rui to be able to create their own shot. And Rui was quite literally falling flat on his ass while he was trying to do it. So, like, it was one of those things where you could tell he was fatiguing. And the same thing happened at the end of the Sacramento game. He started settling for threes in the fourth quarter. He hit several, obviously, but you could tell he needed to dig deep for one last, like, really athletic drive to ice the game against Sacramento. Got into the lane in pick and roll and ended up hitting a little floater. Similarly, in this one of the things that I thought was fascinating is on a couple of the previous possessions, if you watched, Rudy had been throwing a similar hedge on the ball screen. And one of the things that Austin had done was drag that out. Like, he had been literally dragging Rudy off to the side before he would make the next play. And so one of the things that Austin has done consistently well this season and really his entire career is he attacks fast off of these ball screens. And so what he did is when he came off of that screen, he came off with a ton of speed to his left hand, and Rudy ended up throwing the hedge really far out because that's what Austin had been doing, and that's what opened up the gap for the split. Like, the split gap's not going to be open there unless Rudy throws that hedge pretty far out, and I thought Austin did a nice job kind of, like, setting that up almost as, like, a decoy possession after possession. And then when he desperately needed to get a bucket, he knew he was going to be able to come off hard and then split. And then obviously just having the wherewithal to slow down when he saw Dante DiVincenzo show up in the middle of the lane and slow himself down and take that little floater. And he's always just had such gifted touch on that. You could tell he shot that thing high in the air. He was not leaving that short. It was a pretty remarkable piece of shot making.
Yovel, what does it say about this Lakers team and Austin now that they're 2-1 without Luka, 3-2 on the season, that they've managed to keep their heads above water despite being one of the most injured teams in the NBA? More than 50% of their salary cap is in street clothes right now.
I think this is something I spoke about on my show with Daman earlier in the week, of Lakers culture and what they've been building. And it did not get off to a promising start in the preseason with so many guys in and out of the lineup and in both practice and in actual preseason games, and the 1-5 start. And obviously, even the Golden State game, right? Like, they look like a group that had not really played together, and they just had a bunch of sloppy execution mistakes on both sides of the ball. But from the Minnesota game on, which we got to give Jason his props for being the one person on the panel
that's right, called it, the Lakers to win.
I didn't call blowout.
I mean, but from that point, they've played pretty well. And even like the Portland game was like a worst case scenario where you have literally half your roster out, half of your rotation out, and you are playing this young, athletic, ball pressure team when you have not just like half your rotation out, but four of your top five ball handlers out. And It's basically all on Austin to be hounded by Tamani Kamara for the 94 feet, and then it's like if you somehow get past him, now you're going into the trees of Donovan Klingon, who's been statistically one of the best rim protectors this season. So that was a really tough matchup for second night of a back-to-back coming off of a road game. And even then, Austin still dropped 41. And like, I made the point, like I thought that was just as impressive, honestly, as the 51 against the Kings, because when factoring in the quality of competition and it being second night of a back-to-back and like who was out, the Kings game, he had Marcus Smart and Gabe Vincent for most of the game. Blazers game, it was basically all him solo, and he still cooked them. And then I thought like he exercises demons last night, in my opinion, because I we've been hearing it all offseason about his performance against Minnesota, and he had a good game against them in that second game of the season. But this game to me was like just masterful of shot didn't fall. He was bothered a bit by Jaden McDaniels, but still found ways, tied his career high with 16 assists, was slicing and dicing them up in the pick and roll and getting his teammates involved. And it just felt like this was almost like a floor performance for Austin, and his floor was 28-16 and a game winning shot. So he's just really leveling up in a way that it was like, he just keeps impressing us in terms of, I don't know where the ceiling is anymore.
I'd like to remind everybody real quick who's checking in. I see a lot of people in the chat right now saying, I didn't know this channel existed. Hit the subscribe button, so next time we go live, you get notified. Just a quick reminder. Sorry, Jason, go ahead.
No, you're good. I have a quick follow-up for both of you guys, actually. So let's say that Austin ends up getting a deal north of $50 million per year after this. What's his max?
41 and a half.
41 and a half. So let's just make it real basic. Do you think Austin is worth a max contract? Because this has been kind of a debate over the course of the last week or so. And I think it's pretty simple and obvious, but I was just curious what you guys thought.
I think the way that he's playing right now, he certainly is. And the question is, going into the season was, can Austin be a number two guy on a really good team, on a championship quality team? Can he be a number two guy? And the way he's playing right now, it looks like the answer is yes. Now, we're only five games into the season, but you could pay a second best guy on a championship level team. Again, you'd have to structure the team properly around Luka and Austin, but you could pay that guy a max salary, especially if it is, as the Hoop Collective calls it, and Keith Smith and I in the front office will call it as well, the fun max, the 25% of the cap max, which again will come in right around, the numbers aren't locked in yet, but right around that 41 and a half million or so. We'll see what the numbers ultimately look like when the dust settles at the end of the season, but that's where it would start. And then of course you can get the 8%.
Where would he be by year four? Year like around 50?
Yeah, that would get him closer to 50.
Gotcha.
So then he'd be
8% raises
per year. So math.
I think like the average annual value, if it starts at 41.5 or so, the average annual value could be up there in like the high 40s. So, I mean, yeah. He could get something like 5 years, 200-ish million, right? Like over the course of, I think that's realistic starting out or you know, at the max end. I think it's worth it. I think like this level of production obviously is not going to sustain. Luka's going to come back within the next couple of games. LeBron's going to come back at some point in mid to late November. And Austin, it's going to be interesting to see how they figure that out in terms of like Luka will clearly be the number one, but is it a 2A, 2B situation with LeBron and Luka, or is it still more of a 2-3 situation? But Austin, we've seen can scale up when necessary. And based on the nature of sciatica and just the little bit I know about it, it seems like something that can flare up during the course of a season. So maybe LeBron will have stretches where he misses, or maybe they're conservative with him on back to back. So those nights, Austin is going to cook and he's going to put up big numbers. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately for me though, like what will determine the viability of or what his next contract is just like how do Austin and Luka look over the course of an 82 game season together, and how does it look in the playoffs, right? Because if this group, if they win 50 games again, they're a home court team again. If they lose in round one, and you can kind of point to, well, it's still an awkward fit with Luka and Austin, or the defense isn't quite there, it's hard to build out lineups, then that's maybe a different conversation. But I still maintain, if I'm the Lakers, you have to re-sign Austin this summer, regardless of the performance. And then you flip him next year at the earliest, if that's the path you choose to go down. But you don't lose him for nothing. So Regardless of how things play out, I think he's going to get a big number this summer. I think the Lakers are going to re-sign him. And then whether he's a Laker beyond that, I think will kind of come down to what the playoffs look like.
Yeah, you absolutely can't lose him for nothing.
I think there's two ways to look at this particular question. There's the in a vacuum, is Austin worth a max? And then there's the should the Lakers build around Austin and Luka for the future? Because to me, they're two different answers. Like to me, whether or not Austin is worth a max is like a resounding yes. I think one of the defining characteristics of whether or not that type of contract is worth it has a lot to do with versatility. So for instance, like let's say you're a Zach LaVine or you're a Karl Anthony Towns and you're making $50 million, you're taking this massive chunk of the salary cap up, but you're like really good at one thing and then there's not a whole lot else that you bring to the table. Like Karl Anthony Towns is going to, you know, score the shit out of the basketball. So is a Zach LaVine, but there's not a lot of like playmaking, complimentary playmaking. There's not a lot of like defensive versatility. There's not a lot else that he brings to the table. What makes Austin such an obvious worth it max contract guy to me is the fact that he's not just any one thing. This is a guy that with a bunch of, let's just call it what it is, mediocre NBA talent around him over the course of the last three games, he's logged a 120 offensive rating. That means when he's on the floor, he is moving that entire unit to successful offense. That is not the type of thing that you see from some of these dudes around the league that are max contract players. He's also demonstrated the ability to play off the ball as a screen and slip guy with LeBron, or as like a weak side closeout attacker. He's shown the ability to kind of like ebb and flow his aggression based on what the situation calls for. And then on the defensive end of the floor, he has some athletic limitations that are worth mentioning at least. But like the dude competes and does his job within the game plan and is like generally not going to be a breaking point for your defense, at least not very often. And so to me, like, it's so obvious that he is worth a max contract relative to some of these guys that we see around the league. Now, where it gets complicated is again in the context of Luka, because let's say that you're tying up 90, 95 million in your cap for two guys that are below average athletes. That could potentially present some issues in long-term team building. I'm not saying that is the case. I do want to see this playoff run. I think this version of Austin and Luka are both way better than the versions of Austin and Luka we saw last year. So there's a version of this where we look at it at the end of April, May, whenever this train ends, right? There's a version of this where we look back and go, Austin and Luka are fine. Tie them up for $90, $95 million a year, it's no issue. But there's also a version of this where at the end of this, you're like, Austin's great. He can be a number two somewhere. Luka's great. He can be a number one for anyone. Mm-hmm. But Luka probably should be anchored by an athletic star, and Austin should probably be anchored by an athletic star. There's a version of that where that's where we land. But I think that's separate from the question as to whether or not he's worth the money, which I think is so clearly obvious.
Yeah, no question. There's teams with cap space coming up this summer. And if he keeps playing like this, there will be other teams that will give him that money. And if you're the Lakers, you simply can't lose him for nothing. So you talked about this version of Luka and Austin. Jason, let me ask you this simply. If you were to throw this version of Luka and Austin in a DeLorean, put it up to 88 miles per hour because I'm old and I like old references, and you go all the way back to the playoffs last year in round one, are the Lakers getting by Minnesota if you replace that Austin and that Luka with this Austin and this Luka?
So I think it's very, very important here that we don't underestimate Minnesota.
Yeah.
I've underestimated them in the past. This is a team that pretty consistently has had stretches where they've looked mediocre in the regular season. They're like the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, you can watch them in any random regular season game and think they're a bottom tier team in the league. But when it comes to that physicality in the playoffs, all of a sudden Philly's offensive line and their defensive line just controls everything. Like, similarly, I'm not undercutting that Minnesota team by any stretch of the imagination. I'd be foolish to count them out. That said, there are three very different dynamics this time around than what happened last year. Luka, the biggest giveaway to me is Luka in the 2024 series with Dallas against Minnesota made Jaden McDaniels look like he literally couldn't guard him. Whereas Jaden gave Luka some issues in the first round series last year, in addition to some of the issues with bigs on switches and things along those lines, right? Then all of a sudden in that game that we saw last week on Friday, Jaden McDaniels looked like he was absolutely hopeless guarding Luka again. It looked like what it looked like in 2024. Much better version of Luka that is significantly better at breaking the point of attack for Minnesota's defense, which is what generates the high-quality shots, right? Then we have Austin, who is basically a non-factor on offense in the Minnesota series. This is a much better version of Austin. And then also one of the key things that happened in that Friday game, if you guys remember, is after Luka just absolutely flambéed Jaden McDaniels for the world to see, they started blitzing him. And when they started blitzing him, they had the four-out spacing concept with Ayton rolling down the middle, who was able to catch in traffic and dunk some stuff and finish in the lane. And so that four-out spacing element with the big guy in the middle who could finish was literally not an option against Minnesota in the first round series, which I think is an important part of beating their blitz coverage. And so I just think that they were substantially better in three key areas. And so I think we'd be foolish to write Minnesota off, but I also think the Lakers would be a substantially bigger challenge for them than they were in that first round series.
Yeah.
The biggest difference for me has been honestly DeAndre Ayton in these matchups. And it's amazing to see, as we see here, like it's amazing to see what having an actual starting level center does for this group. And in my opinion, I did it show last week and I was asked like, what would constitute a success for Ayton in going into the Minnesota matchup? And I was like, can he maintain his own against Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid? And like, I don't expect him to necessarily outplay them. I don't expect him to win that matchup or outplay both of them. And he did it twice. I thought in both games, I mean, just from a pure production perspective, he outplayed both of them. But like from an impact perspective, I thought he was clearly the best center on the floor in both instances. And that is a dramatic difference compared to what we saw back in late April, where Jackson Hayes was played off the floor and then they literally didn't have a center out there for most of the remaining part of the series. So I think DeAndre Ayton, he's got his flaws and he's got his limitations, but 17 and 10 basically every single night, and the screening, the mid-range pull-ups, the little floaters, like he's been instrumental for them.
Yeah, Ayton is 12 for 20 on the roll so far in the first five games, and like that's, I don't know if you guys can tell on film, they're tough shots. Like they're sinking in on the weak side. He's getting swarmed in there. Like he hit like a ridiculous contested floater over Gobert in crunch time last night. Like he is hitting tough shots in the middle of the lane. It's a release valve for that offense. Mm-hmm.
So because we did see some clunkiness with the Ayton pick and roll attempts, especially in preseason. It felt like they're trying to force the lob. How are we feeling about Ayton and pick and roll right now with Austin? And then how does that progress with Luka back?
I generally am bullish on it in the big picture. I think lob timing is very much a thing that takes a lot of reps. Luka is so damn good at it that I'm relatively certain that Ayton's going to get connected on a bunch of lobs throughout the season. I think with Austin, it'll be a little bit more tricky because Ayton doesn't roll super hard all the time and has a little bit of a tighter lob window than you'd think for an athlete of his size. Where I think he's been super, super dynamic and is just going to be a huge boost to this offense is in that like short roll pocket scoring. Like those little short jump shots, those little quick hook shots and floaters in the lane, those are going to be bread and butter for this offense the entire season. That's where I've been pleasantly surprised because, like, again, it's with the lack of available talent due to injury, he's been getting swarmed down there and he's been hitting really tough shots. I think the lob stuff will take time. I think Luka will eventually figure that out. But I mean, the short roll stuff is way ahead of schedule.
I think we've seen real growth with the Austin Ayton pick and roll since Luka went out. And it's sort of been out of necessity, right? And I had it through the first, comparing like the first two games versus games 3 and 4. I don't have the updated numbers off of last night, but Austin fed Ayton 11 times through the first two games. That jumped up to 24 times over the next couple of games. So you saw them spamming that. And I think one of the benefits from, like, of course you want continuity and chemistry and the reps because you lost that in the preseason. But I think one of the silver linings to this whole situation, in addition to just them actually winning games and maintaining their standing in the West, has been we've seen what an Austin-led group can be. And I actually think, like, moving forward, I would like to see that as they start to figure out some of the second unit pairings. I kind of like the Austin-Ayton two-man game. And especially in comparison with looking at like the different combinations, I'd almost rather structure it like Austin and Ayton with what they have. And they're kind of like funky pick and roll chemistry with each having their own rhythm. And then Luka and Jackson, because we know what Luka does with a lob threat, and Austin is not quite the lob threat the lob passer that Luka is. So I think there's like some natural synergy there of Luka will maximize Jackson offensively and what Jackson is good at. And that really complements Luka. And Ayton could fit with either Luka or Austin, but I kind of like putting him with Austin in some of those second unit groupings. And I think now we have a growing sample size of their two-man game. It's looked much better than compared to like Golden State or Minnesota last week. And getting these reps, I think, will pay dividends later in the season.
Yeah, I think this is the pairing of Austin and Ayton has really made strides. I've been really excited by the way they've been playing together. And I like that call out about Luka and Hayes and their combination together. They do kind of have that mind meld out there on the floor, and Hayes certainly more of the lob threat. The cool thing is that for the Lakers now, and we haven't even gotten to LeBron yet, but once Luka is back, which hopefully will be soon in short order, as J.J. Redick said, within the next couple of games, you're going to have 48 minutes of either at least one of Austin or Luka on the floor to run things and run that offense and get things going. So that is certainly exciting for what we've got coming ahead here for the Lakers. But before we leave Lakers-Wolves, we would be remiss if we didn't also talk about Jake LaRavia. Jake and Bake. Jake was absolutely fantastic. He was on a heater, no question. 10 of 11 shooting in this one. Did you guys see the viral moment? Wolves fans screaming, who is number 12? Who is this guy? And then Anthony Edwards chiming in saying, that's what I'm saying. I don't know who he is. And he went out there and did that. And ironically, I just found this out right before we came on the air. Jake was actually drafted by the Minnesota Timberwolves and then traded on draft day. I had forgotten about that. But give me your thoughts on Jake LaRavia and what he's been doing so far with coming off of this big, big night.
First of all, you hoop your ass off with the Lakers. They'll find out who you are really quickly.
Very true.
That is the beauty of the brand. The biggest thing that I appreciated was the aggressive catch and shoot shooting. One of the things that's been a little frustrating for me watching Jake early on is, like, especially in this stretch of the season where they've been light on ball handling, easy shots are hard to come by, and Jake's got good size. He's a big wing, and he's been a little gun shy on his catch and shoots. And a lot of times the sequence will kind of break down when it ends up in his hands. And so I enjoyed like that just aggressive catch and shoot shooting. And then he's also been like sneaky pretty good at like some of the interior positioning, like the inside seals, the like catching switches on the wrong side of his body and creating a passing angle. That was that big play that he had in the end of the game against Sacramento when he back screened one of their guards. I can't remember who it was. But yeah, like I just appreciated the aggressive catch and shoot shooting. Like, I think that that is one of the most important things that's kind of missing from this team is, like, there's a lot of guys who will shoot if they're open, but we need some guys that are willing to shoot even with their, when they're a little bit contested. And I think Jake's got the ability with that high release point and his size to be a more aggressive catch and shoot player. And that's something I'd like to see him continue as we move forward.
I mean, you guys have me on the show. You could just ask me about my performance last night. Like, I will say with Jake, the one thing that I've really enjoyed and I thought it stood out last night was the defensive pressure. And one of my few gripes with this team to start the season, and this was an issue last year, is like the lack of ball pressure. And in watching the game last night, and JJ talked, they had the one clip of JJ in the huddle where he was talking about, like, we got to play with better physicality. We got to get up into them. We got to play up to touch. And, like, this has been a theme for them throughout the preseason into the regular season, where I went back it just quickly in, like, the first quarter, the first time out, and was looking at a few possessions on both sides. And it was like, the Lakers cross half court, Minnesota is in their jersey, they're arm barring them, they're at least touching them with their arm. Minnesota crosses the ball at half court, Lakers are 6 feet off of them, and collectively, they're just not pressuring the ball. And in screening actions, they're too far off their men, and Julius Randle's walking into jumpers. I thought Rui was particularly the primary culprit with the starting group. But Jake LaRavia, especially even during like the disaster class that was the final 4 minutes where, I mean, they almost tricked the game away and that led to Austin's heroics. Like, Jake was like the one guy who was trying to get into guys, was trying to funnel them certain directions, was being physical off the ball. And that's like a part of his game that it's not going to show up in the box score, but I think he is one guy who has continually played with a certain level of physicality and tenacity. And yes, like, he's a bit slow footed. He could get blown by, and there are some limitations there physically, but I do like the moxie that he plays with defensively. And again, doesn't show up in the 17 point quarter, doesn't show up in the 27 point night, but like, I thought he brought a level of defensive aggression and physicality that most of this group does not bring. And I think that's like a subtle thing that to me could keep him on the floor as the season progresses.
All right, we do need to talk a little bit about some news that we got right before we went live, and that involves the sale of the Lakers going official and what that can mean for the team. We will get there in 30 seconds. We got to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right, you guys can use that code for Sleeper, HMA. Go check them out. They do a fantastic job, and we certainly appreciate them for sponsoring the show. You can find the link in the description down below. I love their real-time news updates. Those are so, so helpful for me. So again, use the link and check out Sleeper. All right, guys, so right before we came on the show here, about a half hour before, we got the official word from the Lakers that the sale to Mark Walter has gone official. Jovan, you've been up close and personal around the team for a number of years now. What do you think this is going to mean for the Lakers now that Mark Walter is the majority owner of the club officially?
I think we're going to see an improvement in quantity and quality with the staff and organization, and just leveling up into a different tier. And it's no secret that going back to like some of the previous coaching searches, but also just looking at their departments in the front office, basketball ops, training staff, et cetera, compared to other teams, like there are certain organizations that have paid and paid much more than the Lakers. And going from being, it's funny saying like, you know, cash strapped or whatever, but obviously right. being one of the, especially with the Lakers brand, but like being one of the smaller organizations from a financial perspective to now being one of the richest organizations, not just in the NBA, but in sports period, that's a you know, fundamental difference in how they're going to operate. So I think it's going to be being more competitive for top hires and being able to match, if not surpass, what other teams can offer. But it's also about beefing up the staff, right? And I've made this point before, but like if you look at some of their departments, and I will note it has gotten better in recent years. So like I think they are generally more competitive with other organizations, but like a lot of organizations might have five or six people in a certain department doing a certain thing, and the Lakers have tended to have two or three, right? So it's going to be, I think, being more competitive with the top people when they're available and being able to match or surpass those offers, but also in general, just beefing up the entity, the organization, and just leveling up with that. So I think the fact that the Lakers have been able to still be a team that won a championship 5 years ago and you know, been competitive and all this stuff over, you know, this period, despite some of the limitations that they've had financially, now if they have the blank checkbook and they're out there spending like the Clippers or the Warriors or the Celtics and leveraging the Lakers brand, that feels like a situation that's going to be special and it's going to be basically unstoppable in terms of just getting the top people in everything, including players, which they have an extensive history of. So I think it's big, like, you know, the big day obviously happened with the actual sale, but now that it's official and they're able to close it out by the end of the month, I think we're going to start to see changes probably more so next summer than during the season, but it's at least like a big day in Lakers history.
For sure. I mean, the Buss family has owned the Lakers for as long as I can remember, and I've been around for quite a while. So, Jason, this is a change, obviously, for the Lakers. However, maybe not a change in that all the reports are that Jeannie Buss will maintain the governor role for the foreseeable future is what's been out there. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I don't have a ton to offer on this. This isn't exactly my wheelhouse, this this kind of more business side of the things on the back end. I will say that I'm excited about the margin. What I mean by that is, like, I think that championships and basketball games are won by slim margins. And if you can generate margin by being a good transition team, being a good rebounding team, by being a team that doesn't turn the basketball over but that forces your opponent into turnovers, these are little things that can help you win. And I think there are margins that exist off the court in terms of personnel decisions, which we've seen, like the Caruso situation, go negatively because of finances over the years, or as Jovan eloquently laid out, behind the scenes support staff that can go a long way, the Ty Lue situation. All of those different situations I expect to be situations that go differently in the future under Mark Walters' leadership. The bit about Jeannie in charge, there's been some recent NBA history, most recently with Mark Cuban. There was a similar type of situation where he was left on as governor, but that didn't last. And my guess is that in the long run, similarly over the course of the next 5 years or so, that there will be different leadership that takes over. I think that as that group becomes more abundantly aware of the way that the Lakers conduct business at the very top in terms of the decision-making process, they'll become pretty quickly aware of the fact that changes need to be made. And then my guess is that pressure will start to work its way down into rectifying that. I mean, at the end of the day, you need basketball people making basketball decisions that are professional basketball people that devote their life to understanding the modern game. And you can't have complications at the top that prevent that system from working properly. And my hope is that specifically gets cleaned up over the next 5 years.
I think this is going to be, you know, it's a changing of the guard. It's an end of an era. The Buss family obviously still involved. So they have to have at least a 15% ownership stake of the team in order to maintain the governor role. Whether or not that'll be a long-term thing, my understanding is they actually put it in the contracts that the Jeannie is going to, unlike Mark Cuban, where it's more of a verbal thing, that Jeannie will maintain that role. But it does seem indefinite in terms of how long exactly that's going to persist. And of course, if you're going to spend the kind of money that Mark Walter did, and we're talking about $10 billion valuation, outlaying as much as perhaps $6 billion in cash in order to get this done, or money to get this done, you tend to want to make the final decisions. I wouldn't know. I'm not a billionaire. That maybe when this channel blows up, then we all can be in that position and we'll know exactly what that's like. But I would assume that if he's going to lay out that kind of money, Mark Walter is going to want to be the chief decision maker there for the Lakers. So it'll be interesting to see how that all develops. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the injury front, and then I really want to sink our teeth into this LeBron James situation with the Lakers. What is it going to look like when LeBron returns? What do the Lakers need from him? Do the Lakers need him? We'll get into that in just a moment. But Jovan, obviously the injuries have crushed the Lakers so far. They've been very damaging. They've kept their heads above water, no question. But when you've got half of your roster out, you've got four of your five ball handlers out, that's certainly been a challenge. We did get some good news on the injury front with Adu Thiro. He is reporting to the South Bay Lakers. Hopefully that is a sign that he would be progressing and hopefully getting on the team soon. And then Luka, JJ mentioned that he should be back within the next few games. Gabe Vincent out for 2 to 4 weeks with that ankle sprain. Jovan, can these Lakers get healthy? And where do we stand currently on the injury front in your mind as far as getting all these guys back and in order and finally getting to see the team together on the floor?
Yeah, it's sounding like Luka could be back as soon as this weekend against Miami. They got the back-to-back home Miami at Portland. Another Portland second night of a back-to-back, this time on the road. That is just a really tough back-to-back. But he did not make the trip with them to Minnesota and to Memphis, so it's not looking like he's going to miraculously return tomorrow night against the Grizzlies for the start of the NBA Cup. It is also interesting to note, like, the Lakers do have a back-to-back with their next game following that. So, like, does he return for both games coming off of a week and a half absence? I don't know. They've been very cautious on the injury front. So part of me is a little skeptical of them throwing him back into a back-to-back. Maybe he plays in like the Miami game, doesn't play in the Portland game, and then starting the following week, he's just back to normal. But they've obviously been overly cautious with the injury stuff. Then LeBron, second to third week. So looking like mid to potentially late going into like that Thanksgiving week return. And then it's going to be something that he's just going to have to manage for the rest of the season, which makes that a bit of a wild card. Marcus Smart could be back tomorrow. Adu Thiro, I think it's probably going to be 7 to 10 days because he's like ramping up to now doing contact. Then the next step is 5-on-5. Then the next step after that is actually returning to play. So I don't see him returning in anything less than like a week or so. And even then, like, he'll play, I guess, based on who's like available right now. But I think with the full rotation, he obviously projects more as like a fringe guy. And then I think that's it. I did run through like five players, and that's the state of the Lakers right now.
That is indeed where things are at. So many guys out due to injury. It's hit around the NBA. I mean, we saw it last night. Anthony Edwards is out. The Pacers are incredibly injured. The Grizzlies, who we're going to see tomorrow night. We'll close out the show talking a little bit about that matchup tomorrow. They are very injured as well. Unfortunate the way injuries have been hitting around the NBA. But like we said, the Lakers managed to keep their head above water so far. Now, everybody else stay healthy so that we can start getting some players back in action. All right. In our group text, Jason, you threw out, I want to talk about, do the Lakers need LeBron? What is this going to look like for the Lakers when LeBron returns? Hopefully we're looking at sometime mid-ish November, next few weeks, seeing LeBron come back in action. So, Jason, where do you want to go with this? And ultimately, do you think the Lakers need LeBron James?
Before I go any further, I want to be clear that I'm aware of the fact that I know that so many people just hate LeBron for whatever reason, and that's going to color their opinion about this kind of stuff. And we kind of have to take those people and set them aside. But I have still seen, even just from the general public, a little bit of like this kind of amassing opinion that the rise of Luka and Austin means that the Lakers don't need LeBron. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend as though if you couldn't turn LeBron into some substantial asset return where you're getting like multi-year contracts on awesome players, that it wouldn't be better for the Lakers for the future. But I think there's no version of a LeBron trade that makes them better in the short term. And I think the being realistic about him as a 41-year-old player, he's not going to bring the type of asset return that some people are thinking of. Also, above and beyond that, I think this is like the textbook galaxy brain NBA take. This idea that because Luka and Austin are kicking ass on offense, that you don't have use for a guy who was definitively one of the 10 best players in the NBA last year. And specifically is a guy that is great, not only at a ton of things, but at some very specific things that this Laker team sucks at. For instance, this Laker team has been a bottom 10 defensive rebounding team to start the season. LeBron James is a guy who would substantially help the Lakers with their defensive rebounding. DeAndre Ayton has shown a lot of potential on defense. You know what will help him be better? Having LeBron behind him to help communicate through actions and help him know when to be, where to be, right? On offense, we have seen on multiple occasions already this season, Luka and Austin fry teams so much that they've been blitzed 25 and 30 feet away from the basket, and all these four on threes are materializing. I can think of nobody better than a guy like LeBron who can make plays out of the short roll to start the four on three, hit the threes on the weak side. By the way, he's been in the mid 40s as a catch and shoot 3-point shooter 2 years in a row now. A guy who can work along the baseline as a cutter. We have literally seen this team, because of injuries, be utterly devoid of ball handling talent. You don't think it'd be nice to have a secondary ball handler who can, at the same time as playing alongside Luka and Austin, also anchor them when one of those guys is off the floor? A guy who gives him another mismatch attacking option. Like, it's literally like, it's so abundantly clear that LeBron would be good for this team, that all I've been thinking, all that's happened for me is I've seen Luka and Austin take off, as I go, oh man, let's get LeBron in here and let's see what this group can do. Mm-hmm. And I see, it just like blows my mind that anybody could reach another conclusion. So please tell me I'm not insane.
You're not insane. I will one up you on the galaxy braining here, because two of my first three super chats last night were asking about the Lakers needing to trade Luka now and just hand the keys to Austin.
Those had like, to be fans right. of other teams.
I was like, can we just enjoy a nice win and like a nice game here and not overreact? But in all seriousness, I think you hit on it. Like, with LeBron, I see the Olympic version of LeBron that we just mm-hmm. saw, you know, 2 summers ago, and the way that he functioned as this like supercharged Draymond Green out there, and obviously much more skilled and gifted scorer than Draymond Green, but like in that role as primarily a screener and then short role playmaker. And to Jason's point, Chris Finch actually talked about this before the game against the Timberwolves, because he was asked, what's the biggest difference between, and this was before the one in LA, like, what's the biggest difference with preparing for just Luka as the primary guy, which at the time was a bit disrespectful for Austin, versus Luka and LeBron? And he said, well, when it's just Luka, we can blitz him a bit. When it's Luka and LeBron, we can't blitz him. And hearing that from that group and you know, one of the top defenses in the league over the past few years, that is how I assume most of the league views it. And if you can't blitz Luka and you can't blitz Austin because LeBron's out there and you're afraid of what he's going to do in 4-on-3 and 3-on-2 situations, then that limits your ability to handle those guys, and you kind of have to guard them one-on-one. And we've now seen over the past 5 games what Luka and Austin do to one-on-one coverage. So I think it takes the Lakers offense to a different level where they're basically unstoppable, especially if now you have Ayton rolling and you know, hitting the little middies or being that safety valve in the mid range. You have Rui spotting up, maybe Jake LaRavia spotting up if he continues to play with more confidence. So or they trade for a guy down the road, and that fifth guy is the ideal player in that spot. So I just think offensively, and then to Jason's point as well about the defense, like, he just does things on defense that Rui's not going to do. And from a help perspective, you know, several of their wing players are just not going to do. So I think it's a no-brainer that he makes them much better on both sides of the ball.
There's no question, and I hate that we agree so much.
Why do we even have to explain this to people? I don't understand. Yeah.
Well, LeBron James is good at basketball. Yeah.
There's a lot of haters out there, right? That will try to jump on any opportunity to discredit a player or talk shit about a player or anything like that, right? And LeBron is certainly has plenty of those, and so you'll get some of that. But I think the problem, it's a misconception of what LeBron James is as a basketball player, because what we've seen him be for so many years is that guy with the ball in his hands. And so people see that and think, uh-oh, LeBron's going to come back and he's going to want the ball in his hands. The first thing he did when Anthony Davis arrived was tell the front office, let's run the offense through Anthony Davis. LeBron doesn't have to play with the ball in his hands. It's been the best interest of his teams to do so. And so people think, oh, we're going to get that version of LeBron. No, he is incredibly versatile. It's one of his superpowers as a basketball player is that he can do anything out there on the court. And we already saw it last year. He changed his defensive role drastically, his offensive role drastically when Luka arrived. So the assumption that LeBron comes back and he's going to take the ball out of Luka's hands, he's going to take the ball out of Austin's hands, no way. He's been wanting to have somebody else to run the offense for him, somebody else to take on the offensive burden. Hell, it's why the Lakers, when we look at the 2019-2020 championship team with LeBron as the point guard, why did they go trade for Dennis Schroeder after that? To take some of that offensive burden off of LeBron James. He's been wanting this for years, and now we get to see the true versatility of LeBron in that he can fit into whatever role the Lakers need from him. So they absolutely need him, and Jovan, that is a great call out by you for the Draymond Green comp. He can be a rich man's Draymond Green for this Lakers team, and I don't think people say, oh, LeBron's got a big ego and all that kind of stuff. I don't think that would get in the way. He may have one, but that's not going to get in the way of him playing the role that the Lakers need him to play. It's part of his brilliance as a basketball player. So I can't wait for those reasons and all the reasons you guys mentioned to see LeBron get back out on the floor, fit in with this team. People saying he doesn't play defense. Well, guess what? When he doesn't have to expend so much effort on the offensive end, that is going to, I think, enhance his defensive game. Not that he's going to go back to being LeBron, locking down MVP version of Derrick Rose ever again. That guy's gone. But I think we are going to see a more locked in defensive LeBron James because he doesn't have to carry that offensive burden. So I'm with you guys. I can't wait for him to get back. And I think he could fit in seamlessly with this group.
He was great on defense to end last year for like basically the entire second half of the season. Do people not remember Game 4 in Minnesota when he like single-handedly wrecking balled the Minnesota defense to Minnesota offense to multiple turnovers late? Like the dude is still such a weapon to have on your defense and for a team that desperately needs defensive talent. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think is causing this problem, this fallacy, whatever you want to call it, is people see Luka and Austin crushing it and they go, oh, it's because LeBron is out of the equation. And this is something that's driven me crazy for a long time. For whatever reason, some NBA fans can't connect the fact that sometimes people get better over the summer. Like, it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, Jonathan Kuminga is finally playing well for the Warriors. Is it because all of us were wrong about Kuminga, or is it because Kuminga started playing better basketball? It's because Kuminga started playing better basketball. Like, is Luka averaging damn near a 40-point triple-double because LeBron's gone, or is it because he was on the cover of Men's Health this summer? Is Austin Reeves averaging 40 and 10 over the last three games? LeBron literally was hand in hand with Austin through his entire rise. He was the guy who empowered him his rookie season after he saw him kick ass at their mini camp before training camp. And he went to the team and was like, sign this dude to a real deal. We need to get this thing going. Austin's awesome. Like, and even Austin himself has said that LeBron and AD both together were instrumental in that early phase of his career. I think people are not allowing themselves to view it as purely a good thing that Austin got way better over the summer and that Luka got way better over the summer. Doesn't mean you need to dramatically reconsider the build of the team. If there's one thing to be very excited about, it's that all of a sudden the Luka Austin thing in the post LeBron era looks tenable in a way it didn't this time last year, in the springtime last year. And so, like, that's just good news for the future. I don't think it has any bearing on this team other than the fact that they can be better when LeBron joins them.
Jason, you're cooking. You're cooking. Absolutely agree. And I have had the same gripe that we look at players as static things, and they're not. They change, they grow, they evolve. I mention it all the time. My reference is always Brooke Lopez. One season, he was not a three-point shooter, goes away for a summer, comes back the next season. He's changing the role of big men in the NBA and shooting threes at an incredibly high volume. Players are not static things. They grow, they develop, they change, and we get so locked into this player good, this player bad. I like this guy. I don't like this guy, and I'm going to argue to death the pros and cons of this player on one side or the other, that we don't account for players changing what they are over the course of their NBA careers. It's something that I think we miss too often in basketball discourse.
100% agree.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this since we've got about 5 minutes left here, guys. Let me get your thoughts. Tomorrow, the Lakers pull into Memphis, and they're taking on the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies, who, by the way, are coming off of a win, not quite at the buzzer, but I think there were about 7 seconds left or so when John Morant hit the little floater in the paint to beat the Phoenix Suns. So, Jovan, let's go to you. What are some of the keys for the Lakers to keep the winning going here and get a W tomorrow night on Halloween? Put a little scare into Memphis.
I think it's the blueprints there for, I'm going to assume Luka is out. We'll get the injury report a little bit later today, but it would be a welcomed addition if Marcus Smart can be back for that game, and he is on the road trip with them. So again, I think he's probably going to be at least questionable for the game, if not probable. So if they get Marcus Smart back, that reduces the Nick Smith Jr., Bronny James minutes, and even the Dalton Connect minutes. And though Dalton did play very well, I'd say like the last six quarters, Dalton has played pretty well. Mm-hmm. And there's signs of life with Dalton Connect, which has been a positive for LA. But I think continuing to, like, I thought one of the things they did really well against Minnesota was getting out in transition with hit aheads and deep seal post ups and just getting some easy buckets even after they were scored on. And there's just the level of pace that they played with that was relentless. And even like, because remember, like they got down by 9 points twice in that first quarter, and it was starting to look like the game was slipping away and maybe this was going to be a blowout for the Timberwolves. And the Lakers just kept, you know, being resilient with their pace and running their actions. And I think the offense has looked really good in terms of organization and just making sure that they're continually running stuff. So I think if you have a heavy dose of Austin, DeAndre Ayton, pick and roll, you got some contributions from Rui Hachimura, Dalton Connect, Jake LaRavia as shooters and second side guys attacking closeouts, getting out in transition. The offensive end, I'm confident in that, like they're bringing a certain level. Defensively remains a work in progress. They've been continually a below average defense, and that we saw again that final 4 minutes, like they can go through some pretty rough stretches. And Ja and Jaren Jackson Jr., assuming they play, because with Memphis you never know who's going to be available, like they're going to test that, right? But I think the Lakers have a real shot to win. And I know we did predictions last week, so I'll come out and say I think they're going to beat Memphis. Now, if they lose, you guys can blame me, I guess, because I picked them to lose to Minnesota and they won. But I'll say they beat Memphis. Also an NBA Cup game, so there's a little bit extra there where that is going to determine the NBA Cup standings and like whether they go ultimately to Vegas. So, yeah, I'll say they win tomorrow night on Halloween.
All right, Jason, do you?
Yeah, you know, I lean towards them winning. I think this is, without Luka and LeBron, this team is so light on ball handling, and teams are starting to figure out we got to pressure the hell out of Austin and wear him out over the course of the game. I'm not high on Memphis as a team. I generally look at them as kind of smoke and mirrors, a team that beats the bad teams and loses to the good teams. They also have been one of the worst jump shooting teams in the league again to start the season, which is allowing teams to really pack the paint on Ja Morant, who before last night's game, I haven't looked at last night's numbers updated, but before last night's game was getting like a half of a point per jump shot to start the season. So I think that we're going to see a strong game plan approach from JJ that is really predicated around packing the paint and forcing Ja Morant to take and make jump shots. And obviously with what we've seen from Austin, we would be foolish to count the Lakers out on the other end of the floor. I'm going to go ugly game that is pretty close slash Lakers trailing at multiple points, but that the Lakers end up pulling it out late.
I'm certainly not going to pick against them. Last week, Jovan, I'm sure you heard it too. I got enough grief for Jason being the only one to pick Lakers beating Wolves last time around. So I will not pick against them. I will also say they get the job done. They get the win. Memphis very banged up, but we also have some narratives to take a look at here. Jake LaRavia, his team option was not picked up. The Grizzlies have since admitted that they made a mistake in doing that, but the Grizzlies did not pick up his team option. Instead, traded him to Sacramento last season. Maybe we get some revenge game Jake LaRavia. We also get to see our old friend Kentavious Caldwell-Pope now playing for the Grizz. They've got some good players. They've got some talent. I'm not saying it's going to be an easy game. You know, the building in Memphis is going to be rocking. They always get excited when the Lakers come to town, but I think the Lakers have been playing well enough offensively. The shooting has been poor enough for the Grizzlies. I think the Lakers can ultimately get the job done. They're riding high in terms of the vibes around this team, the chemistry, the camaraderie. It's certainly there. We saw the guys swarming Austin Reeves after the game winner. Everybody so excited. Luka tweeting out the goat emoji and then Austin saying he must have been talking about himself. Like, these guys seem to really enjoy being around each other. So I'm going to say they find a way to get the job done tomorrow night in Memphis, put a little scare into the Grizzlies on Halloween and get the win. I do want to thank everybody for joining the show today. We appreciate all of you. Of course, every Thursday, we're going to try to make sure we're live. We may have some variations in there, but every Thursday, 10 a.m. Pacific time is what we're going to shoot for, coming on here once a week to combine our powers and talk some Lakers basketball. So if you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button. Don't forget to like the live stream as well. Jason, Jovan, awesome. Always look forward to this show. Appreciate you guys so much. And let's get it this week.
It was good to see you guys. I'm sure they won't always be this cheery and upbeat, but we got to take them where we can get them. And I'm looking forward to next week.
I feel like, similar to Austin Reeves, we are ascending as a trio with our chemistry on the floor. We're each cooking. We're each putting up game winners and 40-point games. So excited for the future.
Let's go. Let's go. All right, everybody. Thank you again. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.